Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you may be listening to this. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. It's the Monday edition. If you got a case of the moon days, we're here to cure it. How you doing, Bob?
Cos, I'm not great.
You had a very angry phone call when we met. And
I was waiting out front of your building, and yeah. I was killing a little time, so I thought I would do a little parent council business.
Oh, so it was parenting. Okay, yep.
I swear, Matt, it's taken over my whole life. Do you remember that episode of Star Trek with the tribbles?
Yes.
It started off as one cute little tribble, and it was like, oh, cute. Next thing you know, the ship is overrun, and they're going to die.
I'm going to go with Gremlins, because there's one, Mogwai, cute, but then guess what? A lot of people died.
You know, it's like a playoff beard, where you start off and you go, oh, it's kind of fun. Next thing you know, you have a big, stupid, hillbilly Jim beard
yeah.
that you're afraid to cut because you've put so much into it.
Mm-hmm.
That beard is my life, and my life is that council right now.
I don't know how specific you want to go into it, but had an angry phone call.
Because like I just fielding angry emails all morning long. I keep thinking to myself, it's a volunteer position.
Yeah.
I want to send Ilya Brizgalov to the next meeting and just say, why not have fun? Why so angry? Start talking about the universe and the stars.
I blame parents, Bob, because when it comes to the precious little children, you know, everyone gets up in arms. I feel for you, buddy.
Who saw this coming?
Yeah.
Besides everybody.
Yeah. So that's the first
little... I told you I'm playing Santa at Christmas, right?
Yes, Bob Mackowitz will be Santa Claus.
Okay, that's the least demanding thing that's come up in the last 96 hours is play Santa at a Christmas event. The least demanding thing.
I think you got to go full Bat Santa. Just go full...
No, I'm not going to go Billy Bob Thornton because that's not my style. What I could do, though, is Dan Aykroyd in Trading Places. Mm. When he's dressed up as Santa
yes.
and he's smuggling out the smoked salmon
yes.
and he's trying to shove food into his pockets.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Yeah.
I would do that. In fact, that's a good segue to our top five later, which is top five most bingeable foods.
That's right. Our top five most bingeable foods. We'll also do a little bit of listener questions. But also, it needs to be brought up, Bob. You know, I think your second thing of anger is you're mad at me.
Why am I mad at you?
I think you're mad at me.
I am a little.
You're a little mad at me because we're going to the National Club after this.
You're wearing a jacket and a shirt and dress pants yep. and dress shoes.
And
not a sports jacket, but like a... Like you're going for a bank loan kind
I'm going
of jacket.
For, yes, exactly. I'm George Bailey right now going for a bank loan. That's
way to keep it keep your references fresh.
Exactly. Hey, kids, you like the 1940s? So that's how I'm dressed. And we're going to the club, and I gave you sort of a one over. I'm like, are they going to let Bob into the National
Club? So this is going to be for next pod. Find out, do they actually let me in? I'm wearing jeans and a black t-shirt.
Yeah.
Do you know why, Matt?
Why, Bob?
Because I'm not going for a bank loan today. I'm just going to meet somebody at the National Club. But actually, honestly, it never even occurred to me because it just wouldn't.
Yeah.
That I would have to dress up to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I've been to a lot of fancy places.
You've been to the National Club before.
I have. No, yeah. but I've been to a lot of fancy places. Like David Eisenstadt took a bunch of us out to dinner at the Shore Club. And there was a $500 tower of seafood there.
Mm.
But you could wear jeans and a t-shirt there.
Yes, you could.
So what is it about the National Club that they wouldn't let me in with jeans and a t-shirt? Or do they have standards?
Oh, no. Jeans are fine. Jeans are absolutely fine.
No t-shirt? What's wrong with that?
It's a little casual.
You're a little embarrassed, aren't you?
It's a little casual.
Be honest. What's casual? Like, people sit around there and drink scotch and read the newspaper. What do they have to wear a suit for?
No, you don't have to wear a suit. So.
What do you have to dress up for? Or do you have to get one of those ridiculous 80s Bill Cosby sweaters and look like you have seven savings accounts?
People like, you know, that in a world we live in where there's so much less formality, or every now and then there's just a little dot of formality in the world. And that's the National Club. It's not, trust me, you've been there before. It's not people with, you know, what's the eye thing there?
The monocle?
The monocle.
They're not dressed up like Mr. Peanut?
Yeah, it's not all monocles and snifters, but it's also, you know,
Okay, so let me, I'm going to extend this a little further.
Yeah.
This is kind of like the Toronto version of like Augusta, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, the, and no, the there's Masters. Far, there's
like,
far
do you guys
fancier.
Cut the crusts off the sandwiches there because rich people shouldn't have to gnaw on crust?
No, that's, that is
Or is
true.
Crust just for the poor?
Yes, it is for the poor. Let me tell you, I remember one time the rich had to have some crust. It was a dark day. No, no, I mean, there's far more fancy clubs. There's like the Toronto Club, the really hardcore ones where no one knows who's a member.
Isn't, we keep using the word fancy, but don't we really mean snooty?
You can use snooty if you want.
Right? Like if somebody who, and I am, well, I don't know who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm just some guy off the street, really.
Yeah.
But I'm as good as anybody else, and I'm your guest.
Yes.
Shouldn't that be good enough for them?
We'll find out together.
Okay. Well, yeah. Next episode, tune in next episode. Did Bob Mackiewicz pass the national test, or is he too much of an actual person?
That's right. We're going to... top five bingeable foods, mm-hmm. our sports takeaways, a couple listener questions, and also, what were you doing the last time the Buffalo Bills made the playoffs?
Do you want to just get into that now? Okay, so it was January 2000. Was it January the 8th was
yeah,
the last
yeah,
playoff
it was
game?
Around, yeah, or first week in January 2000.
So the real key is it's the year 2000.
The year 2000.
Which is 17 years ago.
17 years ago.
Yeah, coming yeah. up on 18.
Yeah.
And after yesterday's less than engaging game against New Orleans, they now drop to 5-4. I you know what? I almost tweeted you just to say, Matt, 8-8.
Yeah.
Right? They were at 5-2.
Yep.
But I and it was like, oh, excited. Tyrod Taylor, quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
Culture change.
Mm-hmm.
And what did I say to you? I looked at it. I just said 8-8.
Yeah.
They will never be more than 8-8.
I had not started it off the record. It was before I hadn't even entered my off the record phase. I was finishing up Ryerson for the 2-year advanced standing RTA program. So that's what I was doing in 2000.
I was the producer of Off the Record.
Yep.
And it was Y2K. I was still dating my now wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to her, this is when I knew I'd probably marry her. I said, what do you want to do for Y2K? She said, I don't know. I said, well, I have a plan. How about this? Y2KFC. But without even missing a beat, she looked at me and said, okay, Y2KFC you later.
Oh, wordplay.
Wordplay, exactly. Spike.
Yeah.
So we got married and didn't get chicken that day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I was doing, is I was preparing for some kind of digital apocalypse.
Yeah.
As the binary code fell apart and the millennium switched over.
One day you need to tell the story of how you proposed to Sandra, because it is the least inspiring wedding proposal, marriage proposal I have ever heard.
Another day.
Yeah.
Another day. We've been pretty self-indulgent with my parent council and your snooty club.
Yep.
And but it's a lovely club.
It is.
It's a lovely
club. You had a nice time last
time. It's a lovely club for the right kind of people.
Yeah. You know the right kind of people are? All people. People were
right. We'll
find out. Mike wrote in, getting yelled at by my grade 8 French teacher, probably.
And this is, of course, where people were the last time the Bills made the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. So I was 18, still in high school. You know, like, it's just like, just going back and looking at it, like, playing King. I like this one. Playing King of the Hill on a snow pile at recess in grade 7.
That's a really good one.
That from Stu Tosh.
That's good one, Stu. Yes. You are. That's a McEwen Cause roll call of heroes kind of answer.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in saying that this is a particularly dismal NFL season?
Oh, no, absolutely.
There's almost like yesterday I went to see which game do I really want to enjoy, because, you know, Bills game is over pretty fast.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't care about any game today. Not one single game. I don't care about one game on this schedule. And I can't remember the last time I looked at an NFL Sunday and thought I could miss every game and not sweat it.
Yeah, there was, I mean, a lot of buys, but more than that, just all the injuries. And everything just comes down to just all
Green
the injuries.
Green Bay doesn't have
quarterback play.
I looked at Tennessee, and now they're 6-3
mm-hmm.
after winning. And I thought, is that the most boring 6-3 you can remember?
I didn't even know they were.
Didn't even care, right?
No, didn't even care. And you know the moment it really realized was that the Rams were playing the Texans. It could have been Deshaun Watson versus Jared Goff, but we didn't get that. We did not get that.
Yeah, that's another injury that really killed us here. Because for a brief glimmer of about 2 weeks, it seemed like he was going to be the answer to who should the Browns have drafted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So,
and the Browns aren't even fun.
No.
Oh,
no,
this reminds
horrible.
Me, before we move on, okay, so we shamed my team.
Yeah.
Who are still, you know, they're on the good side of the ledger, but that won't last.
Then there was my team.
Then there was your team, the New York Football Giants. We should do two versions of this answer because McAdoo could be fired by the time this goes out or not.
That's true. Absolutely.
So let me ask you, and we're going to do sort of like, what's that Ben Affleck movie? Is it called Changing Lanes, where they have two versions of reality?
I think Gwyneth Paltrow was in that. Yeah. It was like Changing Lanes. I don't think that Ben Affleck was in that.
Oh, okay.
But I know anyway. Gwyneth Paltrow was.
All right. Well, regardless.
Yeah, you know.
So version one, he doesn't get fired. How are you feeling about that, Matt?
I'm fine with it because it's a lost season, and now you almost want to lose as many games, so you might as well keep one of the architects there to help the Giants lose. They lost by 10 to the 49ers, who were winless. It wasn't even like San Fran won on a late Hail Mary. No, just San Fran was the better team.
See, I envy your teams losing. Because you're losing with a purpose.
Yeah.
You're going to get a high draft pick. You're going to get a replacement for Eli Manning.
Yep.
And that's great.
And the Bills are going to draft a defensive tackle from Northwestern.
100% at 8-8 with their 15th overall pick. They're going to wind up getting some safety.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And hey, by the way, it's good safety. Hey, he's a good player.
Great.
And guess what?
Great. As long as he can throw for 400 yards, then that's a perfect draft selection.
And they're going to go 8-8 again.
Okay, so let's say that he does get fired.
Yeah.
Does it make you nervous because they might rally?
Yeah, absolutely, because there's, you know, that bump about the new coach, and I think it might be Steve Spagnuolo who might take over, you know, who's a great defensive coordinator, didn't really do it as a head coach. But absolutely, because then it's a fresh face, and then it feels like a team gets a hit reset.
And all you need is two wins, right?
Yeah, all you need is two wins
at this point.
Yeah, and then the baggage is gone, and then, you know, suddenly, you know, you're sacking Kirk Cousins, and it looks like you're winning a game in a couple of weeks. And yeah, oh no, I'm definitely terrified. I want to just leave McAdoo and his goofy mustache. And he's one of the most unimpressive looking head coaches. Like, head coach has to have a look. Unless you're, you know, you either got to be evil sorcerer like Belichick, or you got to have, you know, strong jaw like Ditka. Like, coaches are supposed to have a certain look. And McAdoo just looks like he's assistant night manager at Staples.
Yeah, I think you can get around that as long as you look enthusiastic. Like, Pete Carroll is not a particularly physically dominant.
But he's in good shape.
But he also has the pump in the fist and up and down the sideline. Like, yeah. He wills himself into feeling like an NFL head coach.
Yeah.
And McAdoo doesn't have that. McAdoo always looks like he doesn't know what to order at a restaurant. He's looking at that big sheet in front of him, that big card of plays, and it's like, this is too much pressure. You order first.
By the way, is there, scale of 1 to 10, is there anything worse when you're hungry? And everyone knows but one person. And eventually the waitress says, I'll just come back in a couple minutes. Like, no, I don't know when you're going to come back. I know what I want to order.
I'll take that one step further. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I like even less? Mm. Someone with too many questions. Okay, so the spaghetti and meatballs, are the meatballs on the spaghetti or are they served separately?
Is it pork? Is it a pork and veal meatball? That's an important
Now,
question.
It's a tomato sauce, right?
Yeah, tomato based. Is it? Yeah.
And you want to say, look, we are at the old spaghetti factory. Mm-hmm. They make spaghetti the way it's always been made.
Yeah.
They put meatballs on spaghetti. Have I solved the riddle for you?
Also, Bob, you've dressed like we're going to the old spaghetti factory.
And you look like the owner of the old spaghetti factory right now. Send my food to the National Club.
Yeah.
I'll be there with the newspaper.
You want to do a sports take? Let's do it.
I feel like we kind of... Yeah, I got. Do you want to dive in and do yours first?
Sure,
Raptors one.
Yeah, okay. We'll do some listener questions plus top five most bingeable foods. But my sports takeaway, and actually comes from this morning. You know, I was thinking football. I was going to even do sort of maybe a CFL one. But Brian Burke was on Landsberg in the morning, and he was talking about how in Toronto versus in Calgary or Edmonton, in Toronto, the media or 80% of the media wants you to fail. And I just couldn't help thinking, and yeah, I'm biased because I'm part of the media, but I just think about my own past. I don't think that could be more wrong. The only thing we really root for is interesting. When the Maple Leafs sucked, do you know how horrible it was covering that team? You remember, you know, the Horacek year, the final moments with Kessel. That stunk.
Salute Gate. So many things that
throwing year. Waffles, throwing jerseys. I hated it. This year and last year were the two most joyous times to cover the Maple Leafs or the Blue Jays, you know, during their two playoff runs. Everything was so much more relevant. In the media, Bob, we don't root for teams to lose. We root for interesting.
So does the Toronto media eat its own young? Yeah, to a certain extent, but so does every big city in every sport. That's just the way it is. So
on planet Earth.
Right. Everyone. So if you don't want to work in a place where you're under scrutiny, don't take the Toronto job.
Yeah.
And particularly don't walk in with the bluster where you're talking about how you want to win a championship. And if you win a championship here, you get a school named after you. Don't come in like the guy, the gunslinger.
Yeah.
And even if you do this sort of faux folksy, aw shucks BS, it doesn't matter. No matter who you are. Whether you got the bluster of a Brian Burke or the quiet demeanor of, you know, a Brendan Shanahan, in the end, you will have your time in the barrel if the team is no good.
Yes.
That is just the fact.
Yeah, that's just reality.
That is not Toronto. Are you trying to tell me that in Edmonton, they're not going to turn on Peter Chiarelli if this doesn't work out?
They've turned on him. How many days do you think, you know, how many times do you think in a given day somebody in the Edmonton media brings up Draisaitl's contract brings up Taylor Hall's numbers in New
Vancouver
Jersey?
Vancouver might be the craziest of all the Toronto markets because they haven't had, they had a pretty good run there, obviously.
You mean all the Canadian markets?
What did I say?
You said all the Toronto markets.
Oh, did I? Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
So, they're obsessive about every little detail.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the way it is. It's funny you bring up Brian Burke because, I mean, obviously, I had my run-in with him.
Yep.
He called our boss and said he refused to do the Cebulski show as long as I was on it.
Yep.
Which was not he's not a stupid man. He's a very smart man. He's calling the head of a radio station saying, I, as the president of the Leafs, refuse to talk to you guys as long as that guy is there.
And that's the Drive Time show. Having, you know, Brian Burke or having Leafs on that show is important for the station.
Now, I should point out why he called to say that. He didn't like the interview that we had. And he didn't like the fact that I kept challenging him when I said, why do you have to be so confrontational with people? Kind of ironic.
Yeah.
Considering where it ended up. And I didn't let it drop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, I'm not going to put up with this and that and the other thing. And I said, yeah, but you're the president of the Leafs. Like, it's an honorable position in this city and in this country even. But certainly within the city, you're like second to the mayor in terms of who gets headlines at the front of the Toronto Star or the Toronto Sun.
Yeah.
So he didn't like it. That turned into a thing. And you know, I'm not going to make the claim that he tried to get me fired, but he certainly put the heat under my seat at work. And I thought to myself, that's a really sucky move. You know, like if you want to be mad at me, that's fine. Call me. Chew me out. I bet you he even had good points to make. But if you're not going to look at me eye to eye, man to man, don't complain about what the media does. I was doing my job. And it's like when Donald Trump runs around saying, oh, you know, the media is fake news and they got you and this and that and the other thing. You came out and talked about how they were idiots and everything they do is a lie and they're only in it for themselves. And by the way, they're not covering me with all the positive press I'd like.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's just about go directly to you. For a guy with a bluster and everything, he went behind your back.
You know what really bothered me about it too, Maddie?
Hmm.
At the time when it was done, I thought, I bet you he's going to really remember that and like it because he's a combative guy and he's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I was willing to engage him in a debate about his behavior. And he was completely within his right. As the great Tyler Dello likes to say, it's the marketplace of free ideas. You know, this is what we do. We talk about stuff.
Yeah. Very thin-skinned by him.
You're totally thin-skinned. And I thought he would love this. And he actually hated it. But why? Because he felt angry and embarrassed that I made him look bad. Or at least that's how he viewed it. Maybe I didn't even do a good job. It doesn't matter. He was bugged enough about it to call my boss.
Yeah, but to call your boss, that's the main thing there. And the thing is, fight the big fights.
Fight me.
Yeah, fight you. But like, you know, that's not one that he should have engaged any sort of his time in. And, you know, again, like it's stories like that, which is when I hear Brian say this about the Toronto media, I'm like, come on, Brian. You know, you're smarter than this. Like, you know that what goes on in the only difference between Toronto and Calgary is there's more of us here because there's more people who live in Toronto. So there's more media outlets, more newspapers. There's just more everything.
I refuse to believe that there is a passive Canadian market.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Find me that passive market.
The one where everybody makes bad decisions, but it's cool because we'll just see how it plays out. We live day to day. We live hour to hour and sometimes even minute by minute on the right day, according to what our hockey teams do.
Yeah. The closest I can think of, the first year or two with Winnipeg, you know, when they finally.
Yeah. The loving.
Yeah. And the loving. Right. And rightfully so. And that's not even me accusing Winnipeg media of you got to be tougher. It's like your team was gone for so long. The euphoria there, you know, is going to change the coverage for a while.
You know what I thought was interesting was that happened, the Brian Burke comments on Landsberg's show, on the same day that Alex Anthopoulos gets the job in Atlanta as the new GM.
Yeah.
And I think, if I read the tea leaves correctly, most people are happy, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, for Anthopoulos, yes. 100%. All we're doing is, yeah, I think most fans, yeah, they're happy. They want Anthopoulos to thrive and succeed as long as it doesn't come at the cost of the Blue Jays. But, you know, if they can...
They're in the National League East, yeah, so exactly. Yeah. Who cares, really?
Yeah.
So let me ask you.
Yeah.
What did you think of Anthopoulos as a member? You're a member of the media, mm-hmm. and you covered Anthopoulos teams lots.
Yep.
What did you think of him and the way his staff related to the media versus Burke and his staff?
Night and day. You know, Anthopoulos was, I can only speak for him because I'll say this about the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays, you know, they would block. They would not do a lot of stuff with us, with TSN, because TSN is Bell and Rogers owns the Blue Jays. But if you just compare Anthopoulos was a thoughtful guy, and he just like everyone else, you know, lied, stonewalled, danced, but at least he would do it in an entertaining sort of way. And, you know, you really felt you could have a conversation with him. With Brian Burke, it felt more like a battle. With Anthopoulos, it felt more like a conversation.
Still wasn't going to give you anything he didn't want to give you. He was pretty masterful at keeping the cards close to his chest while still seeming like a fun and engaging guy.
Yes.
And he played the I'm the mailroom guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Brilliantly.
Yeah, did that very well. And also, he's Canadian and we're all rooting for him.
He was just really likable.
Yeah, he was.
And you got to admit, like, if there was every, like, when the 2012 season went to hell and the Jose Reyes and Josh Johnson and, mm-hmm. you know, that whole year went to hell, that was prime barbecue spit time.
Yeah.
He could have been roasted over coals.
Yeah.
And of course, he was to a degree. But I also think because he was so good with manipulating the message, people were like, well, there were a lot of injuries and, you know, it was time. The opportunity was there and not every trade works. Can you imagine that in Leafs land with Brian Burke if something of that magnitude had been attempted and failed that badly?
No. But, I mean, that's also part of it. There's more rage for the Leafs than there was the Blue Jays. But, yes.
And can you imagine Burke being that sort of conciliatory or I'm learning lessons or...
Oh, no. No. It's like, no, all these, absolutely not.
It would have been a battle.
Yes, it would have been a battle with Anthopoulos. It always felt more like a conversation. It's like, I'm not giving you excuses. Here are the reasons. Here's the explanations for why things did not happen.
I believe that that man has a code of honor. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take that away from him. But I also believe that there were times where it was used as a protective shield for him to fight his own personal battles. So he would be looking like he was standing up for his team or his staff. But to a certain extent, I think it was also his thin-skinned nature. And he just didn't like anyone taking shots at his club.
Yeah.
Because it reflected badly on him. Mm-hmm. That's my personal take. And I'm skewed, and I explained off the top of this conversation why.
Yeah.
I had an interesting thing that happened to me once at the Sky Dome.
All right.
Alex Anthopoulos I had never met personally at that point, but I had talked to him a number of times on the radio. And it was the elevator that goes up to the press area mm-hmm. on the deck from the main floor. He and Burke were standing there, the two of them.
Do, 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 do.
And this
do, 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 do.
Exactly. And, you know, he didn't really know who I was, so it didn't make any difference. I was just standing there, but Berkshire did. And he was staring daggers.
Really?
Staring daggers. And I remember looking at the two of them and thinking, here's this one guy who's bringing this other, you know, like almost like a courtesy trip. You know, we do this here. And then he's kind of tour guiding him along. And I thought, wow, what two different human beings. Like this one guy wants to put me in a bag full of horseshoes and throw me into the lake.
Yep.
And the other guy's just leading like this, you know, a Matt Cause B&B type tour.
Yeah, it's like, hey, how you doing? Check this out. Yeah, that's funny. What's your Raptor takeaway?
You got any other takeaways you want to do?
It's a shortened Monday edition. So
okay, so my Raptors takeaway, and this is after the Celts lost last night, is you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him stop running ISO plays in clutch time.
That is actually the quote.
I believe that is how that old slice of wisdom goes.
Yeah,
you saw lead a horse to. Oh God!
You saw that in the last minute.
I guess the last four or five possessions for DeMar, and it needs to be said, you don't not want the ball in DeMar's hand, right?
Yeah,
you want him, but this idea of let's just set some screens and try and get him some kind of mismatch, and he's just going to shoot a mid-range jumper. Isn't this exactly what we said the Raptors wouldn't do?
And after the game, Casey, Lowry, and DeRozan defend it. And yeah, I want him taking that shot. But listen, I get why he would take that shot, but they were really enthusiastic. And there was like, yeah, no, that's just how it's going to be. And yes, those final couple minutes, that felt like that's the thing you're trying to correct.
Don't you feel in the playoffs, and never mind the no Kyrie, no Hayward factor, but just the way they were coached, that the Celtics would pick up the Raptors like a bulldog picking up a Raggedy Andy doll and just shake them around in a 7-game series?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The only way the Raptors have a chance is for 4 times where DeRozan has the crazy 45-point game.
Right.
And the problem is that's not sustainable. Much like, and I know you were going to use this analogy, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers don't win games if they don't generate turnovers. Well, guess what? You're going to have a lot of games where you don't generate turnovers. Can you still win? And again, sorry, I didn't mean to steal your point.
I did. I can just erase that point just off of my notes here.
Just delete that.
Lose the Winnipeg point.
Yeah, poor Matt Nichols. But the same thing with the Raptors. You're not going to get those sorts of DeRozan games, especially in the playoffs. And they kind of feel like they're falling into, they got one way to beat you. And it's a great way. And you can win 40-plus games in the regular season with it. You're not going to do it in the playoffs.
That's the fear. I feel like Kyle Lowry's being a good citizen on this team. You feel like he's not looking for his shot nearly as much as he could. And the three-point, like, look, I don't want to get into Casey's rotation. I don't want to get into Fred Van Vliet at the, on the floor at the end of the game. What I do want to get into, though, is that losses like yesterday's, which were a gut punch,
yep,
take away from the fact that the kids are doing great.
Yeah, they are.
Right? Like, again, Ananobi's defense looked terrific. I don't know why Poeltl was stapled to the bench, but I promised we wouldn't get into rotations. But Siakam played well.
Yep.
Nogueira was a force defensively around the rim. Do you not feel like this is just a setup for Casey to be fired? Because Masai must be looking at his team and saying, you know, I assembled all these bits and pieces out of the junk of draft picks and pieces and trades and stuff. And, 100%. You know, and they're pretty good, but my guy is not managing my big three.
And especially after a Celtics game, because Brad Stevens, one of the better coaches in the NBA, you sort of look at him and go, ooh, look at that. Look at that over there. It's you know, and then you go back and look at yours and go, I mean, I like you. And, you know, you're an honorable man. You're a decent, good, kind soul. And, you know, your outfits are better now than they were a couple of years ago. But, oof, I got to say, this Brad Stevens at the end of the bar, let me buy that guy a drink. Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like.
There aren't so many of those out there. Mm-hmm. I think that we can get excited about the shiny new thing, and the Celtics just happened to find one. But, man, they didn't have their two arguably best players on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They're on fire right now. Like, they're playing out of their minds.
Yeah.
But the Raptors should have won that game.
They should have won that game.
It just felt like in that fourth quarter, it wasn't that there was bad planning. It was like there was no planning. Like, how many possessions were just, let's just fumble around and then we'll see if we can't ISO somebody off a screen?
Yeah.
Like, where's the thinking?
Well, the thinking is,
where's the pushing the ball up the court and trying to get the Celtics on their heels and not let them reset and so that they can use their length against you?
The thinking is, we've done this the last 3 years and we've won a lot of games and we've won a bunch of playoff rounds, even though they struggle in every postseason and every opponent they've ever faced in every series. But that's the thinking. It's like, hey, this style has gotten us a lot of wins over the last 3+ years.
It's a bit of a frustrating message that, you know, everybody says afterwards, and of course you're going to protect your star, but that we want DeMar to have that shot. Like, yeah. I said, I don't even mind that DeMar has that shot, but everything that leads up to that shot makes me think, this must have been the easiest thing in the world for them to defend.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, what are the Raptors going to do in the final 15 seconds of a close game? Where could this possibly be going?
Yeah,
I would rather have had him kick it out to Van Vliet and have him clang one off the backboard just so that someone in the NBA would say, okay, well, at least it might not always be DeRozan.
Yeah, when you look at the film, you go, okay, they've done this on a couple of games.
They have another play.
Their Swiss Army knife has something else. It has another blade.
Ooh, the spork.
Yeah.
I don't care. Nobody uses the spork, but it's just good to know you have one.
Yeah, exactly. It's comforting.
By the way, what's the most useless thing on a Swiss Army knife? Isn't it the toothpick?
It's the toothpick. It's 100% the toothpick.
Who the hell would ever use like that cruddy plastic toothpick?
You're in the woods and that white plastic. Yeah, horrible. It's so true.
So you're in the woods and you've just killed a wolverine with your Swiss Army knife and you've eaten it.
Yeah.
You know, Grizzly Adams style. You're going to pick your teeth?
No. No, I was watching The Revenant yesterday. I don't remember at any point Leonardo DiCaprio getting out a toothpick. I don't remember that. I do remember the bear treating him like a human pinata. But
so you go to Black Creek Pioneer Village and say, excuse me, sir. where's the toothpick making station?
Yeah, exactly.
I see the butter churning.
You know who goes to the toothpick making station? The kid who's not paying attention, who's in trouble.
Okay, whittling, whittling.
Hey, Steve, you're whittle us a toothpick. Yeah, that's yeah.
I never understood that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got a couple of quick takeaways, actually, sure. Real fast. RJ Barrett to Duke.
Great.
Really?
Yeah. You just don't like Duke.
Hate Duke.
Yeah, so it's a great spot for him to go to. It's a great coach.
Could have gone to Kentucky.
Yeah, of course he could have gone to Kentucky.
Should have gone to Kentucky.
Whatever.
It just hurts.
Yeah. Hurts you. I don't care. I'm glad he's at Duke.
Really?
Yeah.
But then again, you're the one who thinks I'm underdressed for the national club. So that's kind of your thing.
I was wondering, you know, I think we'll be fine, by the way. I think we're gonna have a gay old time.
At the national club?
Yeah.
Or when Duke plays Kentucky.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
You know, we saw this with Wiggins a little bit, the idea of the Canadian who's quite possibly going to go number one.
Yep.
Anthony Bennett shouldn't count and never will count because that was just a weird anomaly.
I don't know who Anthony Bennett is.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned some
is this like the Ten Commandments where Moses' name is taken off of all of the towers and monuments in Egypt?
Yeah, well, I was actually going to go with Mel Brooks' History of Life. The 15 commandments, and then he breaks one. Ten commandments.
What were the other five?
Yeah.
I bet you there were five plays on there that Dwayne Casey could run at the end of a game.
I think he has it. And something involving oxen. Always feels like oxen was prominently featured in the Bible.
It's funny, eh? Like, oxen comes up a lot. I think oxen was hot stuff back in the day.
Yeah, really.
Like, that was kind of like having a Porsche or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you know, by the way, that back in, like, ancient times, the way to show that you were rich, people would rent pineapples. Owning or having a pineapple, it's true. Owning or possessing a pineapple was a sign of great wealth.
In what community?
I don't know. Like you know, like the ye old days where the oxen were plentiful. Yes.
So like in Egypt.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I would think that if there were a lot of pineapple trees around, then it wouldn't be that big a deal.
I don't know what to tell you.
You know, in the olden days, not the ye old days,
yeah.
But the early days of Canada out in the East Coast,
yeah.
They used to give prisoners lobster. It was like,
what?
Yeah, not because they treated them so well, but it was sort of like this food for like the hoi polloi.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you go have some lobster in there while we lock you up and you think about what you did.
Okay. Could I have some hot butter? No hot butter for you. This is torture.
Cruel and unusual punishment. The other thing that I wanted to bring up real fast is Mookie Betts of the Boston Red Sox. Bowled a 300.
Bowled a 300. That's incredible.
Can we make an agreement here? A gentleman's pact between a gentleman and his friend?
Yep.
The friend being me.
Okay.
Bowling is awesome.
For the first two games.
No. Bowling is always awesome. Mm. Golf is interesting for about the first three or four holes.
I don't golf.
Yeah. But bowling is awesome, and that every time you go bowling, you always say the same thing. Man, we should do this more. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and guess what? Do you know why you don't? Because bowling's not awesome. The first two games of bowling are great.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere early in the third game, I remind myself, this is why you haven't done it in 18 months. So I enjoy bowling, but it has its limits for me.
I think it's always fun, and it kind of reminds me of that list. I made a short list here of sports that are super fun but not cool.
Okay.
Curling.
Curling is fun.
Super fun.
Yep.
But not cool.
Not cool.
Backgammon. Super fun but not cool.
Is backgammon a sport?
Yeah. For another day, perhaps. Lawn darts and horseshoes.
Yeah. Cornholing. Don't forget cornholing.
Don't know what that is, but it doesn't sound like a sport either.
It is. It depends where you're playing it. It is a sport where you hunt the ultimate.
Just go back to being rich with pineapples.
You hunt the ultimate prey. Man. No. Cornholing is when you get like the beanbag and you gotta throw it and there's like, you know, 20 feet away and there's a little wood structure set up and you got to try to get into certain holes. Cornholing.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it's called, Matt.
It is.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm going to Google image it right now. Oh, God. Yeah.
Your computer exploded.
Delete history. And then you get the message. Psst, there's something called incognito mode. Don't judge me, computer.
Final sport that's cool.
Yeah.
Or not cool, but fun. Mm-hmm. Bocce ball. Have you ever played bocce ball before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, it's fun. Actually, even cricket is fun.
I've never
played No, not cricket. A croquet. That's the one croquet, I was thinking of. Croquet is fun.
When I think of croquet, I just think of the old movie Heathers with Christian Slater and Winona Ryder.
Right.
A lot of croquet.
Yeah, it's a you know, we used
timely
to,
reference.
Yeah, we've been pretty timely. Oh, who's kidding who? We're like this every single time.
Yeah.
All right, so do you want to get into listener take questions, or do you want to do the top five bingeable foods?
We'll just do some listener questions.
All right, thanks everybody who bothered to send them in. We always ask.
Yeah.
Like, we act like we've never asked before. Like, every single time we do this, it's like, oh, do you have any questions? Mm-hmm. People must be thinking, I sent you 15 already. Don't you keep these?
Well, no. We keep the best ones, and we usually try to ask them. Chelsea Darlington, where's the when's the Instagram account going up?
I feel like I'm back on the parent council again. Will everybody stop tapping their foot at me?
Bob, you promised an Instagram account about a month and a half ago.
Okay, why don't we make the first picture what I'm wearing and what you're wearing today?
Sure.
This goes back to the, what do we call ourselves? The Angry and Drinky Show?
Yeah, the Angry and Drinky.
Oh, Messy. Wasn't it Messy and Angry?
Ooh.
No, Messy and Drinky?
Yeah, that was last week's episode. I've already passed.
So gone.
Yeah, so gone.
All right, so the answer is it's coming.
Who is your pick for NFL MVP?
Good question.
I mean,
Jerry Jones?
Jerry Jones is up
there. He's probably made this year more interesting than anybody else.
Trump, Papa John's, Colin Kaepernick.
Is Carson Wentz going to win the MVP?
He could. I think the only argument against him is he has so much help around him, but bleep it.
They're running away with the division, and he's a quarterback.
They're not going to give it to Brady because they're just tired of giving it to Brady.
Also, I think, yeah, maybe. We'll see how they end.
Yeah.
You know, if he has a couple more games like he did last night against Denver. No, I think maybe the Wentz argument is interesting because you have to establish the next series of star quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about how they're depleted in that category. It's pretty hard for a non-quarterback to win.
Yeah.
And who's really been better than Wentz this year?
Yeah, Kareem Hunt, the running back for the Chiefs. But, you know, the first month you maybe could have given him the MVP. But you never give it to a running back.
Right.
Another one I give it to, Tyron Smith. He missed the Sunday nighter.
Six sacks, buddies. Six sacks.
By some dude who'd come in with 1.5 sacks. Man, when they talk about losing Ezekiel Elliott was bad. Losing Tyron Smith was murder.
Yeah, I don't know who the guy is with his name is who replaced him on the Cowboys line, but they did that cutaway and he just looked sad and bewildered.
He just looked sad.
Oh, that was one of those painful sports cutaways where you go, there's too much human drama here.
Yeah.
Please cut away.
Ron Ward writes in at @RI_Ward.
Well, you didn't pick an MVP.
Oh, I'm going.
I went with Carson Wentz.
No, it's Wentz.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got to be Wentz. I'm on honeymoon with Sens fans. Let me do it again. On the honeymoon with my wife, who's a Sens fan, in Scotland, watching late Leafs game and your podcast during day trips. Hey, thanks for listening. How long will the marriage last? And favorite scotch?
We should probably take this one at a time. How long will the marriage last, Maddie?
I'm going to guess 6.5 years, because the Leafs will start winning some cups, and Erik Karlsson will not win the Norris a couple years, and that'll just enrage your wife. So that'll be it.
Yeah, I'm going to say forever.
Ah.
If they're driving around Scotland listening to our podcast,
mm-hmm.
then somebody in that car has a good sense of humor. And I don't mean that we're funny. I mean about how bad life can get.
Yes.
And that's one of the most important skills you can have in a new marriage, the mm-hmm. ability to roll with difficult situations. I can't think of a more difficult situation
for
than locked in a car with us.
Yeah. What are you talking
about? So forever.
Situation would be worse. Locked in a car with us and you're driving. Now the situation just got worse.
At least it'll be over soon, though.
That is true. And I can't answer it because I don't really drink scotch. I know this might shock people. I don't golf. I don't drink scotch. But what's your favorite scotch?
I'm the scotch guy. Yeah. There's one called the Balvenie. Mm-hmm. Or the Balvenie, depending on how you pronounce it.
Yep.
Scotch is really weird that way, in that because all these words are, God only knows how you actually pronounce them.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to have a bottle of Balvenie in the Balvenie. It's kind of like the Ohio State.
Yeah.
I try to have at least a bottle of 12-year-old scotch in the cupboard at all times. And 18-year-old Mac Allen is for fancy stuff. But that's like a $200 bottle of scotch.
Ooh.
That's like one of those, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like truffle oil.
Special night, exactly.
So you know what? I keep thinking to myself, I can't really drink anymore because the doctors gave me meds to keep my brain level. And man, I miss scotch. I just like, what would it be like for you if you could never drink wine again?
Well,
like never.
I'd be 30 pounds lighter and I'd have a lot of money, but I'd be miserable. That would suck. Like just with a meal, with people, just, you know, just sitting on the balcony or on the dock. There's just something about a glass of wine that makes things better. I'd be miserable.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm necessarily miserable, but I will say, since you were in Scotland, though, treat yourself. There's also one called Laphroaig that's really good, and that's peaty. And you know what I think is interesting? Because, you know, you always talk about wine and peaty notes and all this kind of stuff. Like, peat is basically like poop mud, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just, it's a peat moss.
Right. But peat moss is like poopy moss, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a pungent smell.
Right. So basically, this delicious scotch tastes like poopy dirt.
Yes.
Man, life is weird.
Some of the other listener questions we're going to save because we got to get, so I'll save some of them. But we want you guys to send them in each and every week. And we always appreciate what you guys do. The listeners provide us with so much content. But top five, we'll end with this. Top five most bingeable foods.
I mentioned this mainly because I'm off my cleanse now.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what this weekend looked like.
Yeah.
I may have put it all back yesterday.
There you go.
I had four pepperettes at one sitting because I just didn't want to stop. There is just something about salt, fat, and sugar that...
it's beautiful.
It really is.
And by the way, salt, fat, and sugar, all prominently featured in most bingeable foods.
Fair to say. Yeah. Do you want to go first? Because I feel like this is kind of my wheelhouse.
All right.
So...
number five, McDonald's French fries.
Mm.
Has to be... And listen, I love all French fries. But McDonald's French fries, because they're skinny and stuff, and you can just cram a whole lot in there.
All right. So do you want me to disagree with you now or wait till you finish and then disagree one by one?
No, let's do it one by one because you might forget.
So here's the reason why that's not a bingeable food, although it is a delicious food. Is have you ever gone and ordered two or three orders of fries with your Big Mac?
I have had the extra large and then eaten other people's fries around
me. I don't feel like... unless you make like a meal out of something and you just obsessively, repeatedly go to it, that it's really a bingeable food. Mm-hmm. I think what you have is just simply a tasty food that's not good for you. Would you ever go to McDonald's and only get three orders of fries?
No.
Right.
No. But I'm talking about all the French fries. Those ones are the easiest to binge.
They are the tastiest fries, but I disagree because I don't think we binge them. I think they're a side dish.
Number four, mint chocolate chip ice cream. Because you get the one bowl of it, and then, the tub is still there in the freezer, and you're like, why not I just get a little bit more?
Okay.
And then at some point, I'll just finish off it. So okay. Number four, mint chocolate chip ice cream.
It's a perfect pick. And the flavor doesn't matter because everybody has their own particular
mint
favorites,
refreshing.
Right?
Refreshing. You feel like it's not as heavy. There was a reason why I picked it, Bob.
That's actually a really good one because it's like the palate cleanser between every dish.
Yeah, it's like French vanilla ice cream. Well, I'm not having chocolate. Garble, garble, garble.
That's pretty good. Yeah. This was my also ran one with apologies to ice cream because you didn't make my top five. Mm-hmm. The pint... mm-hmm. is the most evil construction because how do you not eat all of it once you've started?
Yeah.
It's like who takes that and puts it in another bowl? Don't you just start spooning it out of the little pint?
Oh, that's the thing. The final part, the shame consumption is you're not even using the bowl. You're just using the pint itself.
So here's the three-step process to consuming an entire pint of ice cream.
Yeah.
You get to the halfway point. You go, man, that was good. I'm really full. Then you say, I'll just have a couple more.
Yeah.
That's stage two. And then you look and you go, it's only about like a third left, a quarter left. It's just going to get freezer burn. I'll finish it here.
Exactly. I'm going to put some warm water on the spoon to make the scooping easier. And there we go.
Isn't that one of the saddest things that we do as human beings is the ice cream comes out of the freezer and it's as hard as concrete and you're trying to ram the spoon into it as hard as you can.
A little hot water on that spoon and it's eating time.
That's a good suggestion, but it's awful. You pull the tiny little flecks of ice cream just to get a little hole going.
Yeah. Number three, this is also food you don't binge eat, but I put it on here because if it's ever around, I grab some. And then if I'm walking and I see more, I'll just grab some. And this happens at breakfast. Simple one. Bacon.
Oh, that's a really good one. Bacon is super bingeable. And it's funny because it's really heavy too.
Yeah.
Like after two or three slices, most people should be pretty sick of it.
Yeah.
It's heavy. It's salty.
But then if there's one piece at the end, I'm going to eat another piece. It's a different version of, because rarely in life do you suddenly have 50 pieces of bacon. But even when you're full, you're like, another piece of bacon. It's one of those foods, you're eating it and you're like, I'm not even hungry. What am I doing?
This probably explains a lot, but I used to wake up early with my grandparents because they lived on the first floor of our home and my family lived on the second floor.
Yep.
And I would go down, they'd be getting ready for work, and breakfast every morning, my parents eventually had to talk to them about it, breakfast every morning was a pound of bacon. Every morning.
Something to be said about consistency.
Oh, man, it was good.
Number two, coconut shrimp. You get... the coconut shrimp in front of me, and I will not stop eating. It's why I was sick on our first ever Macko and Cause because I got some sort of food poisoning from all the. I think that might have just been breaded shrimp at Skydome in the box we were in. But coconut shrimp,
You just, you, no matter how many pieces you put on my plate, I will eat all of them. So number two.
Now, do you need sauce or do you just leave it as the coconut shrimp?
Either
or. Do you need to dip it?
I don't need to. No, absolutely not. I like to dip it, but if it's not there, I don't care.
What is seafood sauce? Isn't it just ketchup and horseradish?
Probably. With sugar.
Doesn't matter, does it?
And number one, the food that transforms all adults into basic animals the way you
can
eat
we say it together? We haven't looked at each other's list, but it's so obviously the same thing. Okay. Ready? Yeah. Three, two, one, say?
Yeah.
Okay. Three, two, one. Chicken
popcorn.
Wings.
Oh! Snap! Chicken wings just were on my also-ran, like number six. But number one for me is popcorn. It's the one thing where, like, it shocks me how much I will have popcorn in a movie theater. And, you know, it's like, I only need a small. Well, a medium is 75 cents more. Fine, I'll get the medium. And it's like three times the size. But at the end of the movie, I'm like, where'd all that popcorn go? And you shove it in your mouth. Just like the word binge, same way you eat popcorn.
Because they actually serve it in a bin.
They serve it in a bin.
So it's like you are binging.
Yes. And you just grab with your hand and just shove it in. So number one, popcorn.
I like popcorn and it's my number two. Because, as you say, the size of popcorn they give you makes no sense.
Yeah.
No sense whatsoever. Do you ever stand there and actually think, what am I doing when you say, I'll have the large popcorn?
Yeah.
I'm going to ram this into my yap for two straight hours.
It's the principle. That's only 18 cents more. I have to buy this.
Doesn't it like drive you nuts when you have small popcorn, though? And you're finished after 15 minutes and the movie's still going?
Oh, even worse?
The worst.
The previews aren't done. You're like, I am running low on popcorn. I don't know what I'm going to do now.
I hate when someone hoards the popcorn and they give it back to you, but they've already gone through the butter.
Yeah.
And so now they just give you the stale, dry stuff in the middle.
I had a girlfriend, Lee Osterman. Yep, I'm saying your first and last name. And she would take the popcorn away. She's like, no, we have to save this for when the movie's going on. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm in the middle of shoving popcorn in my face.
Okay, so you have that. I don't understand at all. There are people who will not have the first piece of popcorn until the actual movie starts.
Who are these maniacs?
Who are you? How do you do that?
I have no idea.
How controlled are you?
Are
they like Japanese businessmen and twice a year they go to retreats and just scream?
Yeah, exactly. Having that level of self-control is nuts.
Oh, man. Yeah, number two. Chicken wings is my number one, and I'll just...
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like perfectly engineered to binge.
Yeah.
They're tiny. You take a couple bites. They're gone.
Yep.
It's partially like Neolithic.
Yeah.
And partially very modern.
Also, you have that moment of pride.
When you see the bones?
Just the huge pile of bones at the end. Like, I have done this.
It's like some kind of horror movie. Like you're in the Alien versus Predator temple and there's a stack of bones that goes as high as the eye can see.
Yeah. Or you've been thrown in the rec room of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The only reason I went with chicken wings over popcorn is because movies and popcorn go together, but people go to chicken wings places to only do this.
Yeah.
Like there's just the singularity of the focus of going to like a Duff's and saying, I'm going to eat 80 wings.
And also they often come in bucket. I'd like a bucket of wings. If something
good
is
point.
Served,
they sell it by the pound.
If something is served by the pound or by the bucket, then you know it's a bingey food.
I also made it my number one because I realized, and I say this with kind of shame, I don't know what a normal amount of wings is. I honestly don't.
20.
Is it?
20.
Because I go places, like, you know when you order it in the menu and it's like for dinner, but you're not at a bar? Mm-hmm. It's like a place that just has wings on the menu and they give you six?
Yeah.
What is that?
Not enough.
I don't even get that.
Some restaurants, pound of wings. How many is that? Seven? I'm going to slap you in the face.
Right.
Seven wings.
Right, exactly.
My God.
So, yeah, I realized, like, I have no concept of what ordinary people do when they order wings.
All right, so number one for you is chicken wings.
Number two is popcorn. Yeah, and just to fill out that list, with apologies to KFC, which I get twice a year and I eat like a whole bucket of and then regret for the other 5 months and 30 days. Mm-hmm. And I just do it again.
Yep.
Pistachios is on the list.
Yep.
Because not only is it a fun snack, but there's the game element to it. Like, how do I open these things up?
Yep.
I'll go through a bag of pistachios. And I'm not even enjoying it anymore. I'm just trying to beat the pistachios and deshell them with only my tongue and teeth.
It's a good pick.
Potato chips, of course.
Yep.
For the obvious reasons. And I wanted to go with the dessert because I realized I'm a salt and savory guy. I'm not really a sweet person. In the sex, drugs, and rock and roll of food, dessert is the sex and salt is the drugs.
Yep.
And but I felt like I needed a sweet one. And cookies are the potato chip of the dessert world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right, you just like they're engineered for you to eat too many of them.
The simple homemade chocolate chip cookie is a perfect dessert.
And you have one, like if you had one, but there was a tray of a dozen more sitting there, like there's no way you're not getting another.
Oh no. Amy made them for friends, girls basketball, the Ryerson Rams, the basketball team that she, a friend of ours is, their daughter is a freshman on the team, and baked all these cookies. And I only had like three of them. And I actually congratulated myself for showing enough self-restraint.
That is pretty good. Yeah. Only three out of an open tray is...
Open tray.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Is cookie dough, like, does it give you salmonella? Is it bad for you?
Probably.
It must, right?
It must. It can't be. Well, it's not good for you.
Healthy bones and teeth?
Yeah.
Have a little bit of cookie dough?
Yeah.
So, yeah, bingeable foods. Now I'm back on my... I have to like clean up again because even after like 2 days of eating like I normally do,
yeah,
I feel hungover.
I know that feeling.
Yeah,
Bob.
Well, I guess we'll find out if we're hungover today. Well, I'm not going to drink, but
yeah,
I may not get into the National Club. We'll find out.
Find out on Thursday's edition of the podcast. Auston Matthews, what's his health like? What's the latest with the Raptors? And did Bob get into the National Club? And also the latest between Bob and his school. Oh, all this and more on next week's edition of the podcast.
I'm laughing because I have a meeting tonight and tomorrow morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it pays well.
It pays great.
Yeah.
Volunteer position, Matt. Dummy of the year.
There it is. Bob, see you on Thursday.
See you later, bud.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.